Welcome to Death by Cubicle with Kelly Owens. If you are feeling overwhelmed or burned out, this is the show for you. Listen to find ways to overcome some of your life's challenges. Now, here is Kelly Owens.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Death by Cubicle podcast. I'm your host, Kelly Owens. Today, we have a special guest with us, and she's going to share about her cubicle story. I know often I refer to these as cubicle stories, and I know that not everybody works in a cubicle, but it's really just a metaphor for where we experience our work life. And sometimes, in some cases, you know, those of us who experience burnout in those environments. So just because you're not working in a cubicle doesn't mean that, you know, this podcast may be not a good fit for you to hear the stories and hear suggestions for coming through burnout. Just remember, cubicle is just a metaphor. But first, I'd like to introduce our guest. Her name is Lisa Hagel. And Lisa's got at least a 25-year career in sales and marketing. She's currently in event planning, but she's had a diverse background with the sales. And so she's got some interesting history to share with you about how burnout has shown up in her life and how she's made her way through that and is I guess, going forward with a new path at this point. So I'd like to introduce you to Lisa Hagel.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for being here.
Yes.
We talked a while back, and you know, what you had to share, struck me as being extremely important, I think, for a lot of the listeners to hear, because you touched on things that I think were quite pertinent to people, especially as we've come out of the past couple of years with the whole COVID experience. That's been very significant for a lot of people. And so, you know, I just like to have you share with us throughout your career, you know, about your times of burnout, what you've gone through, things like that. So to start off with my first question to you, when you look back upon your career, can you identify a time when you think that, like you would say, yeah, that I think that was the first time I've ever really experienced burnout?
Probably career-wise during COVID, probably. Life-wise, I've done a lot of reflecting since we talked about burnout and, you know, the cubicle being a metaphor for things. I've always been super good at compartmentalizing stress. And yes. I've always been a top performer at work, right? And so even when your life is imploding, you can have 8 kids like I do, or you could be married to an addict, or you could be going through really severe personal things. I've always been able to excel at work. And so I think I had many burnouts probably throughout, you know, little tiny ones that were affecting things, but I was able to kind of patch it together. But then when COVID hit, it took away the final place where success was peaceful. And even though sales can be stressful and you can, you know, have a lot of demands on you, I never failed at it. And even through burnout, I didn't fail. I still was incredibly successful personally in my career, but internally I failed and I had a complete and total burnout through COVID.
And when you talk about having that complete and an internal burnout, what kind of things were you experiencing?
I was working in a nursing home and it was my favorite place in the entire planet. Through having all of my kids, through owning businesses, through 20 plus years, I volunteered at this nursing home 3 days a week teaching crochet and loving it. It was like my hobby, my passion. And then one day the company said, would you like to be our sales and marketing person? And I was like, oh, I don't know. I love it here. I don't know if I want to work here. I don't know. But I did. And it was fantastic. It started me on a whole nother career. And I raced through the ranks and I became number one in the nation, but I did so much more than sales, right? You're doing dishes and you're serving food and you're doing laundry and you're pitching in and you're loving it. You go to work every day to escape the reality of your life, right? Because life is hard, but work is, you put it in, you get it back. It's perfect. It's like this great relationship. And it's where I think so many women that I know escape. And then when COVID hit and they locked us in to that nursing home and they made it more of a prison, right? And what we did to those seniors was really hard. It was really hard. And when you're in sales and you have a lot of integrity and you're not selling what you love anymore, you're selling a nightmare. You're telling these families, give me your mom, give me your dad, and we'll take care of them. But how could we, right? We literally could not. I felt like it was like the last piece was stripped away. And I just, you'd go to work and I would lay on the floor in my office and I would just cry. And, you know, then you get up and you perform and you do everything you got to do and your numbers are good. And everybody's like, oh, you're a leader and you're rallying and it's going to be great. But I gained 50 pounds. I quit smiling. I quit laughing. Everything that I love to do, I didn't love to do anymore. And we're 2 years later. I have a very fulfilling career and a very, very happy life. And just the thought of what we went through for 2 years will send me right back.
Yeah. Well, in what you experience, actually, I would say it gets up into that area of actually experiencing trauma. That it sounds traumatic from what I remember us talking about, you know, and being locked in. And I know that, and it comes to the values, because they created a situation for you where they were keeping you from playing out the values, and you valued the family so much and you valued the person so much and wanted them to have a good experience. But then when all the lockdowns occurred and they turned it into a prison, that started to definitely conflict with your own values and not being able to carry out how much you, what you love to do and what you knew in your heart you wanted to give to everyone.
Yeah. Legally you couldn't, right? They took this amazing thing. And after 64 people, where I was the iPad holding bridge of death, right? Sitting there while people passed away, talking to their families on iPad because they weren't allowed in to say goodbye. I just had to walk away. And then what do you do, right? You're a single mom. You have 8 kids. You are a top earner in an industry that you love. And you have to walk away from it and start over. And the good news is there is other things you can do. And there's so much joy. And you can go and find that joy. But gosh, it was, I never thought about it being burnout until you mentioned it that day. And then I've thought a lot about it. And I felt like every person that knows me just said, wow, you know, your eyes look dead. You are heavy. You're puffy. You're exhausted. All you want to do is sleep when you're not at work and when you don't want to be at work and you used to love work. And yeah. it was brutal.
Yeah. Well, and one thing, you know, cause you mentioned weight gain, and I know that when I was going through my burnout too, I had a lot of weight gain because I get stressed out. I'm a stress eater, and because I have so much anxiety. And so, but the cortisol keeps releasing, and that adds to the pounds too. And I think that's what adds to just that look we have about ourselves. It just that sheer exhaustion and total. I can actually see pictures of myself from that time period. And in what you mentioned about the eyes, I could see in the photo that my eyes looked dead. The spark of life was not behind them. And
exactly.
Yeah. So I think your story definitely is almost like a clinical description of burnout. But I think in some cases, I think it's paired up with a traumatic experience as well, because of the very nature of the work that you were having to do and to be there with those loved ones who were passing away and their families could not get into them. That, and just that, you know, we've heard a lot of discussion about isolation, and isolation is definitely one of those key things that can help lead to burnout. But during the pandemic and all the lockdowns enforcing all the isolation for everybody, definitely, I think that has exacerbated a lot of mental health issues for many people, because there's nowhere to take that stress and anxiety. You're carrying it. You're all alone dealing with that. And you had to experience that to an extreme.
And there was such a spotlight on it, right? I mean, we had 1 year when I worked there, 9 people died of pneumonia. We weren't for front page news, right? Like, it was a terrible traumatic thing, but it wasn't front page news. But if you had one person pass away from COVID, you would have the media, the front page of the paper, you'd have everybody on you. And so then every single aspect of your life was kind of affected by it, because every choice you made, do you go to your kids? Do you let your kids have a sleepover? Right. Well, then they're going to invite people in, and then you might take it back to the, to your work. And then anyways, it was really interesting. And I think I didn't put the pieces together until much later. I don't think you can put the pieces together when you're in the middle of all of it. Right. But I would go 2 days without brushing my teeth. Why? I don't have a cavity in my head, and I take great oral care of myself. And I literally couldn't get the strength to brush my teeth, but I could go to work and work 18 hours. Right. Yeah. But I couldn't brush my teeth. I couldn't make a healthy choice about food. I just, there was just so much that was out of character for me. I look back and I'm like, I don't even recognize, and I'm still coming out of it. It's still really hard.
Yeah. It sounds like you were in, almost like in a survival mode, just getting through your day as best you could, you know, with what you talk about too, it's like, if I remember correctly, you had times where, I mean, you were like doing lots of jobs, like you were fulfilling many roles. So like there was the work demands were there and so few resources for you. And you were wearing many hats in there as well.
Very many, like the newspaper, the mail, you know, all the things that couldn't come into the building that we took so for granted. I mean, you realize once you become isolated, how many people it takes just to operate your daily life in a normal way. And then when those people are stripped away, it's like, wow, senior citizens like their newspaper at 6 a.m., like not 6:02, like 6 a.m. And I would just be, oh, it was just amazing. And what an honor to be able to be part of all of that and be that rock for so many people, but really hard, you know. And when you're in management and then you're also trying to take care of the employees and the families and the people that lived there and then your own kids, it was just, it was a lot.
I have so much respect for you and what a heavy load you carried. You know, they talk about many of the heroes during the pandemic. You're definitely one of those heroes.
Wow. Yeah. You don't feel it, but it was, you know, I think it's so unseen, and I watched so many people lose their livelihood when everything got shut down that then you feel guilty and stressed when you're complaining that you're working an abundance of hours and you still have a paycheck, right? So then there's that layer of guilt added into it. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah. And, you know, and one of the things that I definitely pick up on again is like the level of passion that you have for other people and for what you do. And that when you are put into something that really, you know, lights your world up, that you put everything into it. And I do think that many people who experience burnout are more likely to be passionate people than those who are like, yeah, I don't care, you know, because when you don't really care about things, you don't take them to heart. You don't really worry so much necessarily about, does this conflict with my values or not? Or, you know, I really value, you know, being able to do this for families when I'm doing sales. But if somebody isn't really aware of their values or they're just there for the paycheck, they're less likely to suffer burnout than those of us who actually really are in tune with our values and our passions. And then when we start to have those conflicts, it hits us deep in the heart. It really does.
It does. And we owned a family. We had just bought a family restaurant at the time. My kids had sunk their entire life savings into it. We live in a state that is very, very, we were heavy on the lockdowns, right? We were the second most locked down state that there was. And so you, in one minute, have people telling you who is essential and who is not essential, right? I was essential, but my children were not. Their livelihoods were not essential. And then to try to, you know, be a good leader to your kids and go and help them and just say, okay, you know, we're going to get through this. It's going to be fine. When every day I'm like, are we going to make it? Like, am I going to wake up tomorrow and be able to do this again and again and again? And when does it end? And I think for a goal-driven person, like, you have an end, you know, but in that moment, there was no end. I mean, you're in a bad marriage, you can get divorced, there's an end. There is definitely an end. You know, and So you're having a hard year at school. You have a bad teacher. Gosh, that teacher isn't going to be with you next year. You can tell your kids, just stick it out. You know, you're going to have to learn to work with people. You get a bad manager, you're going to outlast them. They're going to weed themselves out. But you're in the middle of something like this. There is no expiration. There's no end to it. So you're like, how? And I'm not a quitter. Married 23 years to an addict. I'm definitely not a quitter. You know, I'm going to fix that, until I didn't. But I felt like a failure. You feel like you're letting everybody down when you walk away from something that you're so invested in. And I'm equally as invested into event planning, which there's not as much consequence, I guess. It's not as hard. But yeah, I don't know. I think that the fact that there just wasn't an end in sight, and maybe people feel that way all the time about everything, you know, when you're in the middle of burnout.
Yeah, I think, you're bringing up a very important point about whether something feels temporary to us or it feels never ending. And it depends on our interpretation of it or how we view the situation. Our own thinking can feel our burnout. And some things have very real, you know, end dates to them. Like you mentioned with school, that you know that you only have that teacher for a semester. There's a known end date to it. Other times, like, you know, with working at the nursing home, not sure, like, how much longer is this pandemic going to go on? How much longer the lockdown's going to go on? Yeah, we were all wondering, because nobody had that crystal ball. Nobody knew. But also, you know, for many in burnout, I know I thought this myself, and this is my own thinking, was, you know, this is a job I need to keep. But I wondered, how long can I keep doing it and feeling this way? So I wasn't seeing any kind of end date to it or any kind of exit strategy for myself. So I just felt stuck in that never ending loop, like kind of like Groundhog Day. I was going to keep doing this every single day.
Every day.
But yeah, so how we view whether it's temporary or permanent definitely can it's a key factor in our burnout as well. Like I said, and some things have very real end dates to them. Other things, maybe they do, maybe they don't. It just depends on how we view it.
And it is funny you say that. I had a terrible manager at the nursing home at one point, terrible. And she lasted 2 years, but I knew I could outlast her. There was like this mental toughness that just said, you know, the good is going to rise to the top. And so I just didn't even hesitate to work through those two really hard years that were before COVID. But yeah, when you have no control over it, you have no, you know, you just can't fix it no matter what you do. That was a different kind of defeat, I think. There was just no hope that it would get better.
Yeah. And, you know, with one of the things that we need to do in burnout as we recover and to prevent from getting back into it is to basically flex our resilience muscle and build up that muscle for resiliency. And, you know, part of resiliency is having that sense of hope. So what you described there, you know, that I know I can outlast her. It was two hard years, but you knew deep in your heart you could outlast her. But when it came to the pandemic, it's like, I don't know. We don't know when this one really is going to end. So can I outlast it? So yeah, I've definitely been in situations where it's like, yeah, that I can outlast that. But others I've wondered, you know, but after a while when we start, but the longer it goes on, it can chip away at that sense of hope. And as that sense of hopelessness starts to rise, that's when this whole thing flips around on us. And the more we step into that burnout at that point. So yeah, recognizing that something's, you know, temporary or permanent, or is it isolated to a situation, or is it global? Is it, you know, with the global thinking, is it actually going to come into my entire life? Does it affect me outside of work now and become this big black cloud hanging over my head? So yeah, it's become that identifying those pieces is so important in the burnout in assessing it. And like you said, sometimes when you're deep in it, it's really hard to see it. It's once you can step away from it and then look back and evaluate it and then start to make sense of it. And it takes time. I think it's like an onion. It's like you're pulling back all these layers, and little by little, it's revealing itself to you where you're able to make sense of it. You know, they always say hindsight's 20/20.
It is.
Yeah. Cause It took me quite a bit because sometimes when I'm deep in the weeds with burnout, I don't recognize anything at the time. It's when I have figured out this last time when I made my way out of it and finally looked back and wrote down and put all the pieces together, like, now I see it, but I couldn't at the time.
So I will say, even completely not career wise, but let's just say you have 8 kids. Let's say you have 2 kids. Let's say you have, you know, however many kids, and your kids want to play multiple sports all at once. And you want to be that good mom because, man, you got Tiger Woods sitting at your dining room table, or you've got, you know, an all-star soccer player at the Spokane County Rec. You know, I mean, it doesn't even matter. You've got all of this potential and you feel like you have to fill their buckets. I have 8 adult children and I do not have 1 professional athlete. And at some times I had 24 sporting events a week and I could not say no, right? Because winter sports clashed with spring sports. And which kid do you say, gosh, you just don't have the potential. I'm not going to let you play because I don't have the time. No, I said yes to everything all the time. And now I say no. I realize when, you know, my threshold is different and it's a life or death thing for me now. Back then I was younger. I had more energy. I would do it. I would deplete myself. But now, you know, I just can't. Do you want a mom that's alive or do you want me not alive? Because it felt like that was how critical protecting myself became. And I'm very, very protective of it. Even as to last night, they called, let's play cards. Can we all come over? Let's all play cards. Let's do that. You know, yes, I want to see my adult children, but I knew I had this morning and I wanted to work out. I wanted to do a bunch of things, right, that are good for me. Yeah. So no, we didn't play cards last night. And my kids were okay with that. They actually were okay. Well, we'll go to so-and-so's house and we'll play over there. And I went to bed and I got good sleep and I felt better today for it.
Awesome.
So I think there's a lot though, but when you are in the middle of all of it and you have the mathlete and the soccer star, you have all of it. And then, you know, how do you do it? How do you do it? It wasn't their fault. I had 8 kids and I worked and, you know, it wasn't their fault. But I guess looking back now, I would have managed it a lot better than I did back then.
You know, you bring up another key point is about setting those boundaries. And well, one, it's like one, the first thing is about our thinking, like how we view the situations. Like, do I have to be everything to everybody all the time? And is that okay for me not to be? And number two is like, when you decide that not to, to actually, do you set the boundary or do you cave? And like, I'll go do it anyway. You know, so it's how we view things. And it's about whether we are willing to set the boundaries and then to create what I call margin, to create that time for self-care. And it sounds like as time's gone on, you recognize all those things where, yeah, when you were younger, it's a little bit easier, but here, especially after what you came through, protecting your recovery is so important now. And I'm so glad to hear that you took that time for yourself to get to sleep and to feel better and put yourself first that way. Even though that, you know, seeing your kids last night and doing the cards would have been fun too, but prioritizing, well, what do I really need first right now? And it's, so you bring up just in you sharing that story, how many important pieces are there for the burnout recovery that we need to have?
Yeah. I mean, the extra hours I worked to afford the sports that we really couldn't afford that really in the long term didn't even really matter. But you want your kids to be in all those camps and all, you know, there's so much that goes into when you are an overachiever and you just want it to be the best that it could be. And you want your kids to be the best they can be. And I promise you, nobody, I mean, there's like a 0.0001% chance you have that kid. And I have great kids and I don't have that kid. So it's, I wish someone would have told me that. I wish someone would have said, it's okay to be in the best school district and be the single mom that can't afford it and say you can't afford it. And that's okay. And I just never did. I just got a second job, third job, fourth job, you know, just, yeah.
You know,
I wish someone would have said it.
Yeah. And when you look back on those situations and throughout your career as well, what would you say would be like the typical thoughts that you would have, like the messages you would tell yourself of why you had to do things?
I grew up in foster care. And I just felt like I wanted to give my kids everything that I did not have growing up.
Yeah.
And I never wanted them to struggle, right? But I think I think some struggle is healthy and necessary to make them who they are now. And they are fantastic now. And they made it through a divorce, and they made it through me being single, and they made it through all of those things. But there was just something in me that just said, you cannot fail. You know, I remember before foster care, when our mobile home got repossessed and we came home from school, and there was no more house because they took our house. And it was just like, oh my gosh, I never wanted my kids to experience that. Right. So, I don't know how lucky that they didn't, right? How blessed that they didn't. But I thought that there was this untapped reservoir inside of me, and there was. I think menopause also was not very kind. I don't know. I thought that I had an endless amount of everything, and it is not endless if you never refill it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, one is just, again, I have so much respect for you because you are such a hard worker. Oh my goodness. You know, you've had challenges, and you have risen up, and you have challenged yourself to overcome them and to lead your children the way you have. So it's really quite impressive. A lot of people may not have had the wherewithal to do what all you have done. And you're right. I think you'd had this deep reservoir of determination, of love for your children, for one, definitely a lot of love for your children to do that, but the determination, the hope, and the belief that you could. And again, that those are all hallmarks of resilience. So that has carried you through so many things, and has actually served you well until eventually we do get to that point where if we're not refilling, you can't fill someone else's cup if your pitcher's empty. And I think you eventually got to that place where your pitcher finally ran dry. Somehow you always had enough in there.
I guess I didn't know that there was a middle, right? I would go 100 and every day, 100 every single day. And if I just thought to myself, if I can't go 100, I'd rather be dead. I didn't realize there's days it's a 50, there's days it's a 60, there's days you're okay to not do it. But I would just think, I will do this until I can't anymore, and then life will be over. That'll be it. But there is a middle ground where it doesn't have to be. I'm still that way. Do not get me wrong. Like, I still wake up every day and look at my numbers and think, I can crush that. I can increase that. I could do better than that. That was good, but it wasn't great. And I could be great, right? Every day, I still do it. But I try to find the pockets where I'm okay with the laundry being on the chair in my bedroom, or, you know, not making myself crazy in every single aspect, because something gives. And what gave was my body, my physical self gave, is what it was.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad to hear that. I'm so happy that, yeah, because we can't be perfect all the time. We, you know, and you're right, there's so much middle ground. And, again, another key point you're sharing is the tendency to go to the extremes. It's an all or nothing. And that's a common thought pattern we have in burnout, all or nothing. And so finding that those middle grounds and finding those pockets where we're okay, it doesn't have to be perfect, or, hey, you know what, it's going to sit there undone and I'll get to it maybe next week. If I don't, I'll find another week to put it on my schedule. I'll find it time later. It's okay. Again, I've had to learn how to do that too, because I had a tendency, I want everything done and everything perfect and check it off my list. And after a while, it gets to be such a grind, and it's not sustainable after a while. We have to allow that time to step back and just be human. And it's okay. And you know what? I know from my point of view, I typically prioritize, okay, well, what's more important to me right now? And that's what I'll focus on first. The less important, it's like, okay, I'll get to you when the time's right. Maybe the time's not right now. I don't have to do all of you right now. Some of you can wait. Yes. So yeah, I've allowed myself that breathing room. Because otherwise I'm just wired. I'm just wired all the time and anxious and tense. And, you know, I find I'm gritting my teeth more than I realized, you know. I actually was at the dentist not long ago, and they see hairline cracks in my teeth. And I did not realize I had gotten to the point where I created that. Middle ground is a beautiful place to operate from, and then choose what's more important at the time, and everything else. Yeah. It's okay to let it wait, but yeah, you definitely are a very strong woman, very strong, a deep reservoir, but yeah, that reservoir, I think, definitely ran dry for you. And I'm so glad you're refilling it and allowing it to stay fuller and give yourself that breathing room.
And what's funny is when your friends or your significant others or your kids, you know, you take one day, you stay in your pajamas and you Netflix, and everybody's like, oh, you're better now, right? Okay, let's go. Everything's better now because you took a day. And I'm like, I could probably sleep for a year and not feel better at that point. I could have literally probably slept for a year and still not felt good. And I still have days where I feel like I'm just barely recovering.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can definitely go down that road easily. It's a slippery slope to go right back into it. It's really interesting.
Yeah, it very much is a slippery slope. I'm glad you say that, because we have in this type of recovery, you have to be vigilant about it. It's easy to think, okay, well, I feel better now, and then slip back into the old patterns. But it actually requires some level of vigilance. And, you know, years ago, I actually used to be an alcohol and drug counselor. So I actually kind of approached burnout recovery from somewhat of a similar model, you know, of addictions recovery. And from what I learned in that field, that it's one day at a time. I've got today, and what am I going to do today? And what choices will I make today that will prevent me from not getting on that slippery slope? Yeah.
Well, it's there. It's no joke. It's, you know, it's, I don't know. And I think no one really questions it when it's work you're addicted to, right? When it's something like that, it makes you this amazing employee. Everybody's like, everything you touch turns to gold. How does that happen? Well, I don't know. I work 22 hours a day. How do you think? I don't know. Like, what do you mean? How does it happen? I don't know. You know,
yeah.
So. And then you have your image and your reputation, and I don't know, it's, there's a lot there. There's a lot.
Yeah. And one thing I think is true too, because you mentioned about that you felt like you could actually sleep for a year, that just one day of recovery was not enough. It was going to take many days, and that you felt you sleep for a whole year. But you know, when I've been through some particularly rough times where I've really hit bottom, I found that, my threshold, my tolerance for being able to take on the stress. Like, it used to be, I would say that my threshold was quite high, where I could take on tremendous amounts of stress. I was back in my 20s when the first time I had experienced burnout and was carrying a very heavy load. But I found that after that experience, but when I came into my next one, that my threshold wasn't as high anymore. That stress, I could trip me off sooner. I didn't carry it as well. And then the next time around, that threshold was even lower, depending on you just constantly going through these things. And so I find that, yeah, I recognize now that anything that comes close to the stress that I knew I could manage 20 years ago, I cannot carry that at this point in my life at 53. I can't. it's not there. Just not
right
there anymore. So yep. Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. I was so grateful. Most 90% of my kids were raised when they had to homeschool, because that would have been the death of me if I would have had all those kids home at the same time, right? I look at those women with such courage and admiration. And how did you do it? Because I only had one kid at home at that point, and it was hard with one, and he was in high school, right? But it was still hard. And I don't know how these women did it. There's so many out there that I just think are heroes just as much, you know, as anything I did. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah. And I think for most of us, we can do anything that we absolutely have to do for short periods of time. But again, if it goes on too long, it's just too much. But yeah, most of us can rise to the occasion, and whatever we're facing, we can tough our way through it and plow through it as we have to. But yeah, it's amazing that if it goes on too long, we're not able to. Now, I know that you've had the beautiful opportunity to transition out of that past experience into your new one with event planning and doing sales and marketing. Let's flip it around. And what actually, like, I guess, fills you up? Like, you know, we're talking about refilling our pitcher. You can't, you know, pour into somebody else's cup if your pitcher's empty. Now, in this new position that you're in, you know, what values are being able to be played out that just fill your day with joy and feel like you actually fill your cup back up through this new career opportunity that you have?
It's funny that, you know, it all translates. So you only die once, right? So when I worked in end of life care, it was really important to get it right. I mean, You had to get it right. You could not mess it up. And while most of us would like to think weddings last forever, sometimes they don't. But in event planning, right? Like, it's their big day. It's their one shot. So it's very, my skill sets are very compatible because I treat, oh, it's your company Christmas party. Wow, we're going to do it like it's death, right? Like, let's just make it the best it can possibly be and let's do it right. And I do everything like that. And so I think working in long-term care for a long time gave me what I call mortality motivation. I know the end is coming for all of us. And I know that we only have so many opportunities to get it right. And I know that someone's wedding to them is as important as a death or a birth, or how amazing. I'm just in a different kind of life experience now than I was in death. And it is a more joyful way to tap into things, right? Still super stressful. Don't get me wrong. Like, the stress level is a lot. Christmas was a lot. But I'm still using the skill sets that really bring me joy, which is knowing that when the pressure is on and time is sensitive, I can make things happen. And that gives me a great amount of job satisfaction.
Fantastic. When, you know, you talk about the stress levels it can be high at times, even with this, even though it's very different. How are you doing stress differently this time around? How are you managing that in a different way?
I might not be. I mean, I am, but I'm not. I don't know. I'm working on it. I'm trying to work out now 3 days a week. I have a lot more control over my schedule, so I can work from anywhere, which really is a beautiful thing. I can work nights, weekends, you know, I can work at whatever time works. Whereas with long-term care, breakfast was breakfast and lunch was lunch. Mm-hmm. And there were, you know, people's lives were on the line. People's lives aren't on the line right now. So it's a lot different. And I think it has melded beautifully with my skill set and my personality and all of those things, because I have more control over. Okay. Sorry. They want to take my car to work. I think nothing has really changed. The amount of stress is probably the same, but I have more control over that stress. And that gives me a lot more control to manage it better.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it absolutely does make sense, because having a sense of control over our time and what we do when we do it, that in and of itself is actually a resource to us, but it also helps with that stress management. And it sounds like, because you do have control over your time, you're now able to do the positive things like exercise, because exercise does help us to, you know, reduce the cortisol levels that are building up as the stress is rising. Exercise is a phenomenal stress reliever, and we benefit in so many ways from doing that. So the control over your time sounds like one of the key differences for you between the last experience and this one, even though stress is, I don't know if there's a job out there that is not stress-free. All jobs are going to have stress. And this is where, you know, unless we learn about what causes burnout, how we manage our stress, learn about ourselves, what we do is that we can maybe keep changing jobs, but we keep repeating same patterns. But for you, it sounds like you're not only able to tap into the skill sets that has served you well throughout your various points in your career, but the difference here, the key difference, is the control of your time and how you're managing that stress. And so that's where, that's a critical difference between the two, because stress can't be avoided. It's just part of life nowadays.
Right.
the world's full of demands, but it's how we view those demands and what we can do to step back and take care of ourselves. So that I'm really happy to hear that you've got that opportunity now to have that control over your time and be able to, again, take good care of yourself as you're going through this. Cause it sounds like there's a lot of really fun and positive aspects to your new career and this new way of using your skills and such. And just, yeah, because you're helping people celebrate very joyful moments in their life. Yeah.
It is a pretty wonderful job. I will say it's pretty amazing. I just have no complaints right now.
Awesome. I'm so happy to hear that for you. That is phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, as we wind down here this morning, I just want to just ask you, would if you had to come up with one thing that you would say to the audience that you would want them to learn from your story or take away from your story, what might that one thing be?
I mean, it's been said a million times, right? I thought I was indispensable at work. I thought that company could not live without me. I missed a lot of things. I literally got off an airplane and sent my kids to Hawaii without me because I thought work needed me on that day. And I did not go on the trip. And I sent them. And to this day, I do not talk to my sister because she received my kids on the other end. And it was supposed to be a family trip. And I really thought I was indispensable with what I was doing at the time. But you are replaceable. And your company will replace you in a minute.
Yes, they will.
If you drop dead, you'd be replaced, right? And your kids will bounce back. They're more resilient than we think that they are. And you only have one life. And you got to make it count. And I knew that. I knew that. But I just didn't know how to get there.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's an excellent takeaway. Yeah, we think we're indispensable. Yeah, they'll replace us. They really will.
Oh, in a minute. And it might even be an upgrade for them. You don't know. They may like it better.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's amazing. And always, I think you are such a gift. Like you showing up in my LinkedIn DMs and the insights you've brought, I think there's just gifts all around us every day, and we just have to learn how to open them and embrace them.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. And that's why I'm hoping that this podcast is a gift to other people and it helps them to maybe hear things as like, oh, I didn't realize that, or you get them thinking about something that helps them to stop sacrificing so much, you know, and to start valuing themselves enough to take that step back, take care of themselves and allow themselves to recover. Cause I think we have a lot of people walking around in burnout at this point.
I think so.
Thank you again for joining me this morning. I knew this would be an excellent conversation today, and I just thank you for sharing with all the listeners. This is so important what you had to say. And thank you for what you did during the time of the pandemic. You are one of those heroes, and I have tremendous respect for you and truly appreciate you.
Oh, thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you. I appreciate it. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, I'll tie up our podcast with some additional insights. Thank you so much.
If you are suffering from burnout but don't want to quit your job, you need to read Death by Cubicle by Kelly L. Owens. Kelly goes over how to deal with physical exhaustion, regaining your energy, managing your stress, setting boundaries, finding joy in your day, and many other aspects to create a mind, body, and spirit recovery. Death by Cubicle launches October 25th on Amazon. Go to www.amazon.com to get your copy. You're listening to Death by Cubicle with Kelly Owens. We hope today's episode is giving you some ideas to overcome the most overwhelming challenges. Now, back to the show with Kelly.
Welcome back. In this segment, I want to touch on the topic of values. You know, my takeaway from Lisa's story is that the conflict with her values is what caused great distress for her in her prior position. Her values drove her life decisions when it came to taking care of her children, you know, pushing herself to be the best at what she does in sales, encouraging others, and being that angel to the ones at the end of their life during the COVID lockdown. You know, what we value drives our decisions and how we feel about things. They're our compass. They help us to live a life of meaning and purpose. When we're living in congruence with our values, we feel at peace. We also feel energized when we can act upon those values. Conversely, you know, when we're in situations that are in conflict with our values, we begin to feel that conflict within ourselves. Things just do not feel right. I mean, sometimes we're acutely aware of what's not right, but there's other times we have this nagging feeling, but can't quite put our finger on it. Having a clear idea of what's important to us and identifying our top five values, we can know what is our foundation. We all need a solid foundation, and without that, we can feel adrift and unsure. You know, it's harder to make decisions when we're not clear on our values. However, when we are clear, we can put things to the test against those values. You know, if they match, then all's good. However, if they're in conflict, it's obvious to us to say no to opportunities that come our way. You know, when opportunities come our way, we can get excited about all the possibilities. However, without putting that opportunity to the test, you know, regarding being in alignment with our values, we may not make the best decisions. We may find we jump into things that later we look back and it's like, I shouldn't have done this. But in regards to burnout, getting clear on your values is going to be a key element of your recovery. Not only can you, you know, identify where things are off track, but you can begin to make, you know, clear recovery plans for addressing those mismatches that we've talked about in prior episodes. You know, now if we're in a toxic workplace, then there may not be the hope of discussing changes with your boss. And so you may need to develop an exit strategy instead. However, you know, being clear on your values as you make that exit strategy, you can then, as you're presented new opportunities and new job offers, you're going to know more about yourself and what you should maybe say yes to or maybe say no. You know, but if your workplace isn't toxic, but it's just not exactly conducive to wellness, you have the chance to have discussions with your management team about what you need. You know, for example, also if you're an entrepreneur, you know, you may need to reevaluate portions of your business to see where you achieve better alignment with your values. You know, some aspects you may need to delegate to another person because it just is not in alignment with your value, but it may be something that's good fit for them. Or you may find it requires simply an amputation from your business plan. You know, if it does not align with your values and it does not actually add value to your business, it's time to rethink your business plan and maybe remove it. You know, now to help you get started with identifying your values, you can simply brainstorm a list of things that are important to you. And now, if you like, you can get a free download of the workbook from my website at www.revealedpotential.com. And that's spelled REVEALEDPOTENTIAL, revealedpotential.com. On the website, it, you know, has a full list of the values to help you with your brainstorming. But here's, you know, a simple listing that I can give you for right now. Starting off with achievement, adventure, balance, belonging, community, connection, cooperation, creativity, dignity, diversity, environment, efficiency, excellence, fairness, family, friendship, generosity, growth, health, inclusion, integrity, job security, joy, learning, loyalty, parenting, personal fulfillment, recognition, resourcefulness, respect, responsibility, security, self-expression, service, spirituality, teamwork, time, trust, travel, usefulness, vision, and wealth. Like I said, that's just a sampling. There's a lot of them out there. I encourage you to get the workbook to help you with that. But once you get your list, your values listed out, begin to group together the ones that you see as being similar. You can also categorize based on areas of your life. In coaching, we use what we call the life wheel. And that's where we break it out into these segments of our life and we measure how well we think we're doing in those areas. But you can maybe align this values list with those areas to help you with that brainstorming. So The areas are, you know, family, friends, significant relationships. The next area is personal growth. Another is fun and leisure, home environment, career, money and finances, health, and that could be physical health, mental health, and then spirituality. You know, out of that list, you know, try to narrow down five core values that you see as being foundational. These are the ones that, if missing, other things would not be possible in your life. Now, once you get your five identified, I want you to really dig deep and begin to write out your why for that value. Why does it matter? You know, once you answer one question, ask your why about that answer. And you're going to do that for five rounds. We call this the five why. It helps you to drill down and get down to the root beliefs that you have. So let me give you an example. So in this example, we have a man named Joe, and one of Joe's values is achievement. If you value achievement, why is it important? So Joe answers, well, achievement allows me to build a better future. So why is building a better future important? Joe answers, I can provide for my spouse and my children better. And why is that important? Joe says, well, because I love them and I want to be a good provider. And why is that important? Joe says, well, you know, being a good provider means I'm living up to what I believe I'm supposed to do. And why is that important? And Joe says, well, I'd feel like a failure in life if not being a good provider to my family. I believe that is one of the most important things I can do in life. So you see, we asked that, the why question five times. We kept digging deeper and deeper as to each answer he gave. Well, why is that important? So you see, achievement isn't just about making money and getting titles for Joe. The core belief is that being a good provider for his family is one of the most important things he can do in life. It's like it's his life purpose. And so not being able to attain achievements leaves Joe feeling like he's a failure, not living into that purpose. Now imagine Joe's working in a place that has no room for advancement because maybe there's no training programs and there's no career bands developed. So there really isn't any open position to get promoted into. Now, as time goes on, he's going to feel stuck. And he'll begin to feel like, you know, he should have achieved more by a certain point in time. We don't know what that is. Somewhere he'll just know that by this time I should have done such and such by now. So when that time comes, the worse that feeling is going to become for him. You know, his value will begin to drive his decision. You know, should he find a new job? Should he ask for a promotion or should he talk with management and see how they can support his need for achievement by allowing him some new training and maybe creating a new position where he can implement that training? He definitely has some options here. And his other values will also be drivers in whatever decision he decides to go with. If he has clarity with his values, it will help him make decisions more easily rather than being lost in the confusion and not sure what to do. Now, I encourage you to spend some time on identifying your core values. It'll help you see where you're struggling with things being out of alignment with them. Again, some of those you may be acutely aware of what's just not working, but there may be others that you just have this nagging feeling that it's just not right, but you can't put your finger on it. If you go through the values exercise, that may help you to start to identify, well, what is it that's bugging me, but I don't quite know what that is. You know, you're going to learn why these values mean so much to you. And then you can begin to craft a plan for getting back in alignment with them. You know, I want to thank you for your time today listening to this episode of the Death by Cubicle podcast. You know, I invite you to look up the Facebook page. It also goes by the same name, Death by Cubicle, and to follow it and to join in the discussion about burnout and burnout recovery. If you've not had the chance to listen to the prior episodes, I encourage you to listen to those and, you know, get some of the takeaways that may be helpful to you. Thank you again, and I wish you peace and wellness.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of Death by Cubicle. If you liked today's episode or found it helpful, be sure to catch the next episode available on demand on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.